We are going to talk about the policy and the politics involved with the federal budget deficit this hour, as President Obama is meeting this week with Senate leaders on the issue, and we'll meet with the House caucuses in the next few weeks as well. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, May the 12th. The president met with Senate Democrats yesterday. He is scheduled to meet with Senate Republicans today to discuss, in his spokesman's words, the need to adopt a balanced approach in confronting the nation's long-term deficit challenges. So what should that approach entail? And when it comes to a vote on raising the debt ceiling, which Congress must do soon, what strings or spending cuts should be attached? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Stephen Smith, political science professor and director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what is the president trying to do here by meeting with the Democratic and Republican Senate caucuses this week and in the House in the near future?
Well, obviously, he's trying to soften up the Republicans for some deal-making and to respond to the Democrats' complaints in the last round of negotiations over the extension of spending authority for just this fiscal year. Complaints that he really didn't take the lead in those negotiations, left them out there hanging a little bit, and the whole thing dragged on a little bit longer than it had to. So he's responding to demands on both sides, and this is a far, far bigger issue than what we saw a few weeks ago on the continuing resolution. This is the debt ceiling, and obviously, what's happened here is that the Republicans have forced the Democrats to think about some larger, grand scheme for addressing the long-term budget problem.
Mm-hmm. How have the Republicans forced Democrats to do that?
Well, more or less by saying that they're going to condition their support for an increase in the debt ceiling, which is necessary for the federal government to continue to borrow. Condition their support for that increase on a larger budget deal. And because the Republicans control the House of Representatives and the House must approve the debt ceiling increase, they have a source of leverage.
Yeah, so Republicans are insisting there must be big spending cuts and big strings attached.
Well, that's right. And exactly what they're demanding has not been clear. We're getting a little more this week than we've heard in the past. Speaker Boehner just 2 days ago said that he wanted the long-term deficit reduction, presumably he means over 10 years, to be of the size of the increase in the debt ceiling. So the Treasury Secretary has indicated that increasing the debt ceiling by $2 trillion, it's now 14-point-something trillion, would be a good idea. And so Boehner implicitly is saying that there has to be a two trillion dollar cut in spending over 10 years to accompany that.
And by Speaker Boehner insisting that we need trillions of dollars, not just billions of dollars in cuts, he's drawing a line in the sand, isn't he?
Well, yeah, and experts in negotiation might think that he's actually putting his feet in concrete on something that cannot possibly be the basis for a compromise. It's very unlikely that Democrats and therefore the Senate will go along with that particular demand. $2 trillion in just spending cuts is pretty massive, really, and so it would be a big reduction. The Democrats are showing signs this week of wanting something that involves a 50-50 split between tax increases and spending cuts. So the deal here is somewhere between 100% spending cuts and no tax increases on the Republican side, and a 50-50 split on the on the Democratic side, and most of us sitting on the outside of the negotiations would say there's room for negotiation there.
Yeah. And how soon is this this debt ceiling vote going to happen?
Well, that's unclear. The federal government will reach its debt ceiling over the course of the next few days. But the Treasury Department can basically manipulate trust funds and other monies under its control so that the federal government actually has the cash to pay its bills for the next many weeks. And so the Treasury Department thinks that its ability to manipulate its cash reserves will really run out in about August 1st or 2nd. So that basically gives us 2 months for working out a deal. Now, it's not desirable that we wait for 2 months. The Treasury Department has to do a variety of things that end up costing the federal government money in the long run in order to avoid default in the short run. So, for example, they control many different trust funds, pension funds for federal employees, the Social Security trust funds, and so on. And they basically reduce their investments of those funds, which, of course, incurs debt and counts against the debt limit. And they actually call in bonds and other things early so as to generate some cash, which means that they pay a bit of a penalty for doing that. So it costs us something to have this delay. And it's not free. It's not merely a matter of juggling the books. There are real costs to delay. Nevertheless, it looks like the Republicans are taking the August deadline as their own deadline and don't seem to be in any particular hurry to cut a deal here in the next few weeks.
We are talking with Stephen Smith, a political science professor, director of the Wiedenbaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis, about the federal budget deficit, the debt ceiling, and all the politics involved. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions on this. Do you like this 50-50 approach of spending cuts and tax increases as favored by the Democrats on this matter, or should there be trillions of dollars in spending cuts and no tax increases, as the Republicans seem to favor? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking the weather forecast for today, areas of fog this morning. Otherwise, it's going to be a partly to mostly cloudy day today. There is a chance of showers or thunderstorms, especially this afternoon, and especially the possibility of some strong thunderstorms with large hail in southeastern Wisconsin this afternoon. Currently, we do have sunshine in Superior, 52 degrees. Wausau's cloudy and 58. Green Bay fog and 59. In Eau Claire, it's cloudy, 61 degrees. La Crosse is mostly cloudy and 64. Madison reporting some fog, though I do see some sunshine trying to peek through there, and 60 degrees. And Milwaukee mostly cloudy and 57. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, May the 12th. Coming up after 8 this morning, we'll welcome in the author of It's Always Personal, Emotion in the New Workplace. We'll talk about our emotions at work, including anger, fear, and crying. How do you deal with emotion in the workplace? Coming up after 8 o'clock. Right now we are talking about the debates going on in Washington over the federal budget and raising the debt ceiling, what's on the table and what's off, and all the politics involved. And we're welcoming your questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Stephen Smith. He is with Washington University in St. Louis. And our first caller is Laverne in Monroe. Hello, Laverne.
Hello, Joy. Great program.
Well, thanks for calling, Laverne. What do you think about all this?
Hello, Stephen. I think President Obama is correct when he said he should raise the individual income tax back up to 40% where President Clinton had it. The Republicans are wrong because they want to lower it down to 25%. But I do think the closing of the tax loopholes, which I don't know if either party is really sincere about, where they hide a lot of their money offshore. That's the big sleeper, and they could start doing that right today. What's your guest's opinion on that?
Well, you know, I think there's a great deal of interest in Congress about closing loopholes as a part of the solution. The offshore issue is really a somewhat separate issue about how corporations that operate on a multinational basis get taxed, and that continues to be a huge challenge for the United States and for other countries, by the way. But it is a challenge we haven't really stepped up to and addressed very effectively yet. I think the bigger issue in the short term is loopholes, and it looks to me like there will be some Republican support in the Senate for a plan to close loopholes, especially on the corporate income tax side, in order to raise revenue, and then split those revenues between some rate reductions for corporations and deficit reduction. That's what Senator Tom Coburn has been talking about now, really pretty actively for the last few weeks. He's a part of this so-called Gang of Six, three Republicans and three Democrats in the Senate, who are trying to work out a bipartisan plan. No party leader is a part of that negotiation, and it's quite separate from the negotiations that the president and the White House are conducting. But it is something that is showing a way for at least some Republicans to think about increasing revenues without increasing rates, maybe even reducing rates by closing loopholes. So loopholes and rates are somewhat separate questions, and it looks to me like loophole closing will be a part of the picture.
I just heard on NPR News that yesterday in the Senate, Democrats especially were hammering away on eliminating tax breaks for oil companies. And I heard Senator Chuck Schumer saying, you know, hey, with record high gas prices and you oil companies, making all this money hand over fist and our high deficit, you don't need these tax breaks. That's got to be a pretty popular issue these days.
Well, I think it is, and I think the Democrats will probably score some political points there, but there's no budget solution in that. That's worth a couple of tens of billions of dollars a year when our deficit is well over a trillion. So it's a start, probably will be a part of the picture, at least as the Democrats end up drafting a proposal. You know, Paul Ryan, the Republican chairman of the House Budget Committee, came up with a proposal that received so much attention a few weeks ago that included the fairly radical changes in Medicare,
right,
and became known as the Republican budget. We haven't seen a budget yet from the Senate Democrats. The Senate Budget Committee was to meet this week and maybe report one, but the budget negotiations seem to be taking precedence over that. After all, if they can negotiate a budget deal across party lines, that should take precedence over just another partisan plan. But we haven't seen a Senate Democratic plan, and my guess is that a Senate Democratic plan will include loophole closing, and I think the Democrats would include in that the tax breaks that the oil companies currently enjoy under the corporate tax structure.
The Medicare plan of Paul Ryan's, I thought, has essentially been taken off the table until after the 2012 elections. Is that right?
It certainly has, if not permanently. It ran into a firestorm. Republicans went home and discovered that they were in deep trouble by their association with the Ryan plan. And so the Speaker, who has endorsed the Ryan plan overall, has said that they really won't be pursuing the Ryan plan on Medicare anytime soon. So the Ryan plan on Medicare, which would move the program basically to the private insurance sector with government subsidies for those who need it, is more or less off the table for now. You know, Medicare is not the problem in the short run. It's a long-term problem and a big problem, But in the short run, even the Ryan proposal wouldn't have, on Medicare, wouldn't have made a dent in the deficit over the next few years.
We go back to the phones, and Scott in Green Bay is with us. Hello, Scott.
Good morning. It's always been my contention, because you see revenues to the Treasury that have increased dramatically over the last 20, 30 years, that it's a spending issue. I mean, everybody wants, I mean, the hot thing is, you know, raise it back to the Clinton rates, because the Clinton times were so great. Well, why don't we then go back to the Clinton budget? I mean, if Clinton's rates were so great, I would assume that his budget numbers were so great. Why don't we bring spending levels back to that? You don't want to hear that. And my other issue is, we wouldn't be where we were, especially with this debt ceiling issue, if the Democrats wouldn't have punted on the budget last year. They didn't even propose one. And I don't know how they get such a great pass on this, when that really is one of the big issues and one of the reasons we're having this debt ceiling issue. The Democrats just punted on a budget. We're not going to offer one.
Is that why we're in the spot we're in now, Stephen Smith?
Well, you know, Scott raises some important issues, but his comments reflect how easy it is to be, confused, honestly, about the fairly complicated subject like the federal budget, and distinguishing between the long-term and the short-term considerations. You know, the Republican concerns today are mainly about the long-term budget picture. They've already made a deal about spending for the rest of this year, and my guess is that on somewhat of the same basis, some cuts, they could make a deal for spending for next year. The real issue is the fact that the Republicans quite reasonably want the federal government to address the longer-term budget situation, which shows that there's a structural imbalance between the revenues that the federal government brings in and the projected spending under current policies. Most of the increases in that government spending are due to increases in the cost of providing health care benefits in Medicare and Medicaid. And so the long-term problem requires that the government do more on Medicare and Medicaid. Now, Scott mentioned that the Democrats didn't pass a budget last year. I think what he means is that the Democrats failed to pass the appropriations bills, that is, the spending bills that give government agencies authority to spend money. And, of course, the continuing resolution that was at issue just a few weeks ago was an issue because those appropriations bills had not been passed on time. But that issue is, you know, now more or less settled. I should add that one of the reasons and a major reason why those appropriations bills were not passed was that the Republicans in the Senate were signaling their willingness to filibuster them all and prevent them from being passed because they disagreed with the spending levels in them. So we've had a partisan impasse over how to deal with the budget now, going on a long time, really more than a decade. What the Republicans are trying to do now is use the leverage they have over the debt ceiling and their control over the House of Representatives to get some kind of a long-term deal in place. There are a lot of Democrats who think that, yeah, why not now? Let's get this long-term deal in place. Maybe we can force ourselves to make the compromises we haven't been able to make over the last half generation.
If you could talk a little bit about Steve, who wanted to say everybody's talking about bringing back the tax rate to the Clinton administration era,
yeah,
but nobody wants to bring, you know, government spending down to what it was then.
Well, if we actually had domestic discretionary spending at the levels of the Clinton years, we would fairly radically increase spending. We've been cutting, as a percentage of the GDP, the discretionary domestic spending. That is on education and welfare and the space program, all the things you normally think of as federal programs. That has been declining as a part of the federal budget and as a percentage of GDP. Now, we've spent a lot more money on wars, and we've spent a lot more money on the major mandatory or entitlement programs of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And so most of the action is in those huge federal health programs, and we really do need to do something about them to address the long-term budget problem. But to go back to in the discretionary spending area to Clinton-era levels as a percentage of GDP would actually allow us to increase spending, oddly enough.
See if we can fit one more call in before we have to check a newscast. Dave in Mount Horeb. Go ahead, Dave.
We've talked about the increase in the taxes, but the four times in my adulthood when we've had a balanced budget, the key issue, the key factor is getting people back to work. We had relatively high tax rates, and we had people back to work. Key issue getting this, all of these matters resolved is having people back to work, and cutting taxes is about the worst technique that the federal government has to improve that situation.
Well, you know, I think there are many, certainly the Democrats think that we shouldn't do anything on the budget side to reduce or reverse the economic stimulus that's in place right now. Deficit spending has the effect, of course, of putting more federal money into the economy than it takes out. And that puts more money in the pockets of people, helps increase demand, and helps to stimulate the economy, create jobs. But there is this long-term deficit problem. And my guess is that the Republicans care most about that long-term deficit problem and can work with the Democrats on the short term. And after all, we already have policies in place that sharply reduce taxes, keep taxes down for the next couple of years.
Let me hold you there. We'll pick up after we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:36 on this Thursday, May the 12th. President Obama met with Senate Democrats yesterday and is scheduled to meet with Senate Republicans today to discuss a range of issues, including the budget deficit. The president will also meet with House Democrats and Republicans within the next few weeks. President Obama and congressional leaders are wrangling over spending for the next fiscal year, cutting the $1.4 trillion U.S. deficit and raising the U.S. debt limit. We're talking about the policy and the politics involved during this hour with Stephen Smith, political science professor and director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. And we welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And before we go back to the phones, Professor Smith, where is public opinion on all of this? Do we tend to agree with the Democrats' approach to the deficit or the Republicans?
Actually, there right now, no one is winning in public opinion.
Okay,
if the public is given these three options, should the solution to our deficit and budget problems emphasize tax increases? Should it emphasize spending cuts, or should it include both? About two-thirds of Americans say both.
Mm-hmm.
It's a position you might say, well, then advantage is the Democrats because they're saying both. But the fact is, when you take a look at it by party, then the Republicans in the electorate, out there in the general public, strongly favor taxes over spending, even though they too prefer some mix. So right now, spending really isn't strongly favored over taxes. The real problem for elected office holders, and especially for the Democrats, is that when the public is asked whether they should include spending cuts in specific programs, education, the environment, and so on, the public is generally against that. And then when they're asked about increasing specific forms of taxes, like your own personal income tax, the public's against that. So it's a situation where really leadership is required, and my guess is that the only way that we're going to get something out of this Congress and White House is with some mix of taxes and spending, and the question is under what terms and who's perceived to be the winner and loser.
And how, if more spending cuts were to be offered up, where do we find $2 trillion in savings or spending cuts right now just in order to raise the debt ceiling?
Well, that's $2 trillion over a 10-year period.
Okay.
So, you know, it's more in the neighborhood of $200 billion per year, and we're spending over $2 trillion a year. So we're talking about cutting back on spending in the neighborhood of less than 10%, generally in the 4 to 5% area. Our problem is that the demands on the federal government are increasing over the course of that 10 years. So the number of retirees placing demands on Medicare and Medicaid, most people who receive Medicaid, which is the health insurance program for the poor, most people on Medicaid are seniors. As our population demographics evolve, the demands on the federal government increase. So it'd be easy to say, well, we could take a 5% cut right now. Well, that's not so easy when the demands on a major part of the federal budget are actually increasing at the same time. That's why if you ignore the health care side of the federal budget and make the spending cuts everywhere else, the effects are absolutely radical on domestic programs of all other kinds. So just to give you some sense of it, the proposal to increase the debt ceiling by $2 trillion that the Treasury Department is suggesting is more than double what all the domestic programs in the federal government outside of health care will be spending for the rest of the year. That's about $700 billion. So we could eliminate completely all of the discretionary domestic programs of the federal government right now and still have to increase the debt ceiling this year. That's the situation we're in, and it's due largely to those health care programs.
Yeah. Well, do we just look at the domestic spending? What about military spending?
Well, military spending and the war are a big chunk of it. We've spent over $1 trillion now on Afghanistan and Iraq. To be able to, limit our spending there, we're still spending something in the neighborhood of $100 billion directly and probably much more indirectly. As we need to replace materiel that are used up, so it's a big item, and it's a much bigger item than say the tax breaks for the oil companies. Probably 5 or 6 times as big as the tax breaks for the oil companies. So the wars are an important part of the picture.
Look, Bernie and Elkhorn, I think, wants to make that same point. Bernie, go ahead.
Good morning. Yes, definitely. Christopher Hellman has printed an article in the last few months talking about our real military cost each year is $1.2 trillion a year. You factor in interest on the debt, injured soldiers, etc. We can easily save trillions by bringing all the troops home from the 160 countries they're in and having them defend our borders like the Constitution called for. But I know defense is not what they're really deployed for. But that's where we can save the money. We're spending over $1 trillion a year. It's more than the rest of the world combined. It's ridiculous. We're a military empire, and unless that is cut.
Oh, we lost you, Ernie. Bernie, I'm sorry.
I think we got the gist of his point, and certainly there are Democrats, especially liberal Democrats in Congress, who are making just that point. The administration and, in fact, the Pentagon has proposed substantial defense cuts even for next year's fiscal year, but they are peanuts. They're far less than $100 billion, and probably less than that in real outlays. So it is it's an area where I think many Democrats are looking for additional cuts.
And our next caller is Renee in East Troy. Hello, Renee.
Hi. I've heard a couple times this morning that there is no budget offered from the Democratic Party yet. However, the Democrat, the Progressive Caucus within the Democratic Party did offer up a budget a couple weeks ago, and I would like your guests to comment on that. I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Well, that's true. In the House of Representatives, the Democrats formulated a couple of proposals that were, you know, never expected to pass and never endorsed by the president or the administration, and of course haven't been taken up in the Senate yet. I think most people expect the Democrats' position on this to really be tailored in the Senate, where the Democrats are in the majority and can get their proposal to a vote. And that process is under the really the guidance of Kent Conrad, the Democrat from North Dakota. Senator Conrad is part of this gang of six, three Republicans and three Democrats, who are working on a bipartisan compromise. They say they can come up with something by the end of this month. That's not clear yet. They haven't come up with it yet. They've been working on it for a long time. But they started with the President's Deficit Reduction Commission report as their starting point. And, of course, that was endorsed by both Republicans and Democrats. No congressional leaders endorsed it, but there were members of the commission of both parties who supported it. So there's a chance that this sideshow conducted by these six senators may actually be the path out of this morass. At the same time, we have negotiations being conducted under Vice President Biden's chairmanship and separate discussions, we understand, between Speaker Boehner and the president. So we've got many, many rings in which the circus is being played at the same time, and it's not really clear how this will go. In the end, we know that the top leaders of Congress, especially Speaker Boehner and President Obama, have to be part of a deal.
Our next caller is Tom in Fond du Lac. Hello, Tom.
Hi. I just feel we've gone beyond the point of no return in this deficit debt situation, and we don't have the will or the ability to fix it. And I'm thinking we're going to have horrible inflation, but what would our country look like if I'm correct?
The inflation, I assume that Tom is suggesting, would be generated in the long run by larger and larger deficit spending that would just keep priming the pump of the economy and ultimately generate this kind of inflation. You know, an argument could be made that we need more of a crisis than we've seen so far to generate the kind of bipartisan compromise that's required here, that neither party is sufficiently motivated by their own electoral coalitions to get something done. Democrats' supporters don't want government programs cut. Republican supporters don't want taxes cut. And they prefer to protect those interests more than they want to reduce the deficit. And that probably is the basic logic over the recent past. And it's not clear to me, like it is to Tom, that they can overcome it in the short run. It's very possible that they'll merely muddle through on the debt ceiling, muddle through on next year's budget, and leave the long-term debt problem in place.
By muddling through the debt ceiling, pass a raise in the debt ceiling, you're not
it
saying...
It might be short-term. Mm-hmm. It might include some spending and tax provisions that are important, really, only over the short run, aren't the full solution. Will be called a down payment rather than a solution. That seems to be the way these things tend to go.
Our guest is Stephen Smith, political science professor, director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. He's talking with us about the federal budget, the deficit, and the effort to raise the debt ceiling. President Obama is meeting with congressional leaders, Senate leaders this week, and House leaders in the near future to try to hammer something out. And we're wondering what questions you have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, radar is showing a line of showers now from about Chippewa Falls into the Twin Cities. Other than that, it is dry in Wisconsin. Clear to cloudy, depending on where you are. Superior is sunny and 59 degrees. Wausau is cloudy and 59. Eau Claire, some fog and 61. Madison, we see some sunshine here and 60 degrees. And in Milwaukee right now, it's cloudy and 57. It's going to be partly to mostly cloudy with a chance of showers or thunderstorms today, especially this afternoon. Some storms in southeastern Wisconsin could produce large hail. High temperatures today will be in the upper 60s in far northwestern Wisconsin, in the 70s and low 80s elsewhere. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 8 this morning, we will explore the role of feelings, anger, fear, anxiety, empathy, joy, and crying in the workplace. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. Back now to the phones for Stephen Smith, who is a political science professor at Washington University in St. Louis. And our next caller is Chris in Oshkosh. Hello, Chris.
Hi. I just want to ask your guest, what do you think the impact would be of eliminating the income tax, both private and corporate, or personal and corporate, and instituting a national sales tax? What is the GDP and, say, 10% sales tax? What would that generate compared to what we generate now with income tax?
Well, I don't have any figures right at hand. It's a common proposal that we need some kind of a consumption tax. A sales tax is one variety, a European-style value-added tax is another. Some people simply advocate a straight consumption tax where you would take your income each year, you'd figure out what's left in your bank account at the end of the year of that money, and the difference is what you consumed, and you'd pay a tax on that basis. That would create a powerful incentive for saving, and there are many economists who think that we greatly undersave in the United States, and so something like a consumption tax, sales tax is a variation on that theme, is desirable by many. And, of course, it can be made progressive. Sales tax tends to be very regressive because everybody pays it at the cash register. And if lower-income individuals pay a larger share of their total income in the purchases of items at the store, then they'll end up paying a larger share of their income, which is the opposite of what we do now with the progressive income tax system. A consumption tax that taxes you once a year on the basis of what you've consumed relative to what you brought in can be made as progressive as you'd like it to be. And so there's a reasonably strong argument for that kind of system. Now, how much revenue it brings in, of course, depends on where you set the tax. And liberals tend to be suspicious of these kinds of proposals, even though they may agree with the general principle of encouraging saving, because they distrust that the rate will be set high enough to cover current policy commitments, current programs. And so ultimately, it's not only the form of taxation, but it's the rate. And you can set a consumption tax at a rate that would bring in as much income as the current system, to be sure.
I want to go back to what John Boehner, Speaker Boehner, said on Monday when he said, without significant spending cuts and the way we spend Americans' money, there will be no debt limit increase, saying that the spending cuts need to be in the trillions, not just the billions, otherwise no lifting of the debt ceiling. I guess I didn't realize this, but he made those remarks on the same day that Tea Party activists were calling him a surrenderist. who waves the white flag before the first shot is fired and calling him a wimpy Republican in name only. So what's going on here? The politics of John Boehner and the Tea Party?
Well, he has a challenge, that's for sure. There's a big chunk of his party in the House of Representatives that's sensitive to those kinds of Tea Party charges. These Tea Party folks are a powerful force in Republican primary election politics. So these Republicans have reason to worry that if they're not meeting the expectations of this now fairly well-organized outside group in Republican Party politics, that they'll run into trouble. That's one reason I think Boehner stuck his neck out and pushed for such a big deal as a condition for approving the debt ceiling increase. He has to stay out in front of this group as best he can. And so he's in a bit of a pickle. He knows that the debt ceiling has to be increased at some point. That's 2 months or 2.5 months away. He cannot be seen as caving in to the Democrats. He has to demand something that's a pretty substantial down payment, at least on the long-term deficit problem. And I think we saw in the continuing resolution debate what he has to do, and that is he has to hold out until the 11th hour before he agrees to any compromise with the White House. If he does it earlier than that, he's going to be charged from folks on the right that he's caved in too much and too early. And he has to do it the 11th hour so he can say he held out to the very end. At the same time, he forces his party into a kind of a game of brinksmanship where they have to kind of take it or leave it. This is the best deal we can get. If we don't approve this, then we're going to be blamed for the fallout. And that may be just how this situation unravels here again over the course of the summer months.
And how important is it that the debt ceiling be raised? What happens if it's not?
Well, it's a pretty serious matter. Mm-hmm. There are hardly any economists who think that the debt ceiling should not be raised. In the end, at stake is the government's credit rating. If the government fails to, pay up on Treasury notes that come due, if it fails to pay, service providers who are providing goods and services to the government, we'll find that doing business is going to become much, much more expensive for the federal government and therefore for the taxpayer down the road. People will no longer trust that the federal government will actually pay when it promises, and that will force the federal government to pay higher interest rates on its debt and probably pay more for the goods it purchases.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty serious matter, and we really do need to increase it here. There's really no choice. There's really nothing that Congress can do in the short run to prevent us from reaching that debt ceiling. It will be reached, and the only question is whether or not we're going to pay our bills at that point.
Yeah, and you're convinced at least that we'll muddle through this issue and raise the debt ceiling. And do you think, does your crystal ball tell you that it's going to be this 50-50 approach that the Democrats favor, or can't you say?
Well, you know, what we're starting out at now is as the field is, as the positions are a little bit more clear this week than they were in the past, is it's 100% spending versus 50% spending. And, 75%, 25% is an obvious middle ground. My guess is that Boehner's going to have to say he won, he got the Democrats to go more than halfway. And so something like 80-20 mm-hmm. or something of that sort. That's part of the picture. The other part of the picture is how much do they increase the debt ceiling? The Treasury Department wants $2 trillion so that we don't have to go back and do this in the next year or two. But the Republicans may insist that since they didn't get everything they wanted on a budget deal, that it's only going to be, a six-month deal or a one-year deal. And we'll be back at this sooner than we know.
And we'll be back at this again in the near future. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Stephen Smith, political science professor, director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.